Okay. It is officially 11 o'clock, and I always struggle to do these sessions on time, so I like to get started on time, and I like to start by apologizing by the fact that I will probably go over time, just to get that out of the way up front. So, hello everyone. Welcome to the event. It's always a lot of fun to be one of the first sessions of an event. So I hope the next 2 days are great for everyone here and that you learn lots of information. So I am Ben Armstrong. I am a program manager working on the base engineering team at Microsoft. I spend 80% of my time, actually I spend 70% of my time arguing with engineers about building the right thing for our customers, and I spend 30% of my time out on the road meeting with customers to try and figure out what I should be arguing with my engineers about. And so when this is part of my 30% time. I'm out here to talk to you all. I actually have two sessions today. I've been joking to people that today this is my room, because I am the first and last speaker in this room, and everyone else is just borrowing it off me today. So this is the first session, our level 200 introduction to Windows containers. At the end of today, we have the level 400, where I'm going to be nerding out and really going deep into some of the architecture around containers. Now, between those two sessions, I hope to be spending most of my time hanging out in the hallway and either quietly working on some very boring documentation or, more hopefully, chatting to you all about what you're doing with containers and virtualization and answering questions for you. So that is a plea to, if you see me during today, please come over and chat to me. Otherwise, I will be struggling to deal with jet lag. So before I get going, I always like to understand a bit about my audience. So a first obvious question for me, how many people here have played with Windows containers? It's been out for a number of technical previews. Okay, I would say about a third of the room. How many people have used Linux containers? Okay, about the same, a little fewer. Obvious question, how many people make heavy use of virtual machines in their environment today? Yeah, look at that, that's wonderful. That makes me happy. Virtual machines are my babies too. So the goal of this session, the introduction session, is really twofold. The first one is to just give you a grounding on some knowledge and some ideas that you should have to make it easier for going out and looking at containers. The second one is to try and explain a bit of our thinking behind why we did this, and so that as you're looking at your situations, you can understand when you should be using virtual machines, when you should be using containers. And I will actually start on that topic. One of the most common questions that we've got over the last 2 years as we've been talking about containers is, when should I use virtual machines and when should I use containers? And in the session today, there are a couple of things they'll be pointing at and saying, this is a good use for containers, and this is an opportunity today. But one thing I do want to be very clear about is, Windows containers is an exciting new technology, which is a software developer way of saying we have no idea what we're doing. And it's one of the things I'm incredibly glad that we have the same team at Microsoft working on both virtual machines and containers. And one of the things that I like to share with people is that even on the core engineering team, we have heated arguments on Friday afternoons about what we think the future of the server platform looks like. We absolutely have members on the engineering team who are like, containers have their place, but you know, virtual machines will reign forever. We have members on the team who are like, no, one day containers are going to take over and virtual machines will only be for legacy systems. And then we have members on the team who are like, virtual machines, containers, we're going to build something brand new that will take over everything. And so the reason why I share that is I would encourage to all of you, play with the technology, try things out. Let us know what does and does not work, because we are very much learning in this process together. So a bit of background when we start talking about containers is to take a moment to say the world that we work and live in as, you know, IT pros, as system administrators, as developers, has changed. And the expectations have changed. And really, you know, in the nutshell, the rise of cloud computing has changed expectations. And one of the things that I spend a lot of time talking to people about when it comes to the context of containers is I like to step people back through history a bit. And I like to point out that a long time ago, seemingly in the Stone Age, you know, in those ancient times of the late 90s, we used to do everything on physical computers. And in the late 90s, we started working on virtual machines, and it's kind of obvious when you say it, but many people miss this fact, and that is when we built virtual machines, there was no such thing as the cloud. The cloud came after virtual machines. It built on virtual machines. And so when we designed virtual machines and when we went through a lot of these processes, we were building solutions for a world that was built for physical computers, you know, and we were taking concepts that make sense for physical computers, and we were taking tooling that makes sense for physical computers, and we were just trying to figure out how to do this more efficiently with virtual machines. And from a philosophical point of view, with containers, we've really gone back and said, okay, not only is cloud computing a thing now, it is, we believe, the future of computing. How do we build a virtualization construct that's designed first and foremost for the cloud? And that really drives the spirit of containers. You know, and across the board, we looked at cloud patterns, we looked at cloud expectations, and we said, okay, how do we do virtualization for the cloud? So what are some of the interesting ways that expectations have changed? Availability. Let me tell you, I've talked to many people who fondly remember the days when it was entirely acceptable to tell your company, we're updating some of the systems this weekend, so everything is offline for the entire of the weekend. That used to be the norm. It used to be, you know, completely normal to tell people, like, yes, we're doing maintenance and we're taking things offline for long periods of time. That is no longer the case. People expect things to be online 24/7. They expect you to be able to, you know, patch, update, maintain without taking systems offline. And this is true for internal services. It's absolutely true for external services. You know, it's fascinating for anyone who has an online presence. You know that, you know, for every minute that you are offline, you are losing customers. Because the way people use online services these days, you go, you try something, it doesn't work, fine, you go to the next one. And people don't come back. They don't, you know, they have zero tolerance for downtime. Scale. Oh my goodness. You know, scale has changed in so many ways. And the two big ways that we see scale changing is obviously, you know, it is now, you know, nothing to think about, you know, I need to be able to scale this to a global audience. You know, I can remember not so long ago, I can remember in 2004 talking to a customer where their definition of unbelievable scale was they had a situation where their online service that they were building got covered by a regional news provider on a nightly news show, and they had everyone in their state try to log in, and they couldn't handle that scale. That's what scale used to mean, you know? And these days, you know, we see services get popular and in the next day have hundreds of millions of visitors. Now, at the same time, You know, everyone is under price pressure, so no one has computers just sitting around waiting for a potential load. It's all about being very dynamic. And agility. I love agility is a great one to talk about in a historic perspective. You know, because once again, going back to the Stone Ages of the late 90s, you know, there used to be a time when if you were a developer at a company and you decided that in order to build a new solution, you needed a web server, you would go to your IT department, and if your IT department was really good, world class, they would come back and say, yes, we can have that web server for you in 6 weeks' time. Because that's what it used to take. You know, because getting a web server meant ordering new hardware, waiting for it to turn up, getting it racked up, getting it set up, getting it... And we're now in a world where, frankly, if you take more than 60 seconds to provision a new web server, why are you taking so long? This is a huge change. It's a huge change in expectations and what people want. So why containers? You know, obviously, you know, we're thinking about these changes. And in a nutshell, you know, we look at this and go, okay, people see all these things, I love this picture, but it's hard to do. You know, and I'll call this out as we go through this session. I'm going to talk about some interesting aspects of containers, and most of the things that I'm going to discuss, yes, you can do them with virtual machines. But it is not easy, you know, and it takes a huge amount of effort and a huge amount of planning and expertise. And containers are about making that easier. So how do containers make it easy? Well, we looked at two main areas when we were thinking about how the problems to solve here. And really, it came down to consistency and efficiency. And that's, you know, we looked at a lot of the good things that virtual machines brought to the table, and we said, how can we really just raise the bar here? You know, how can we raise the bar in speed of deployment? How can we raise the bar in mobility? How can we raise the bar in, you know, operational efficiency? How can we raise the bar in so many areas? And there are a number of aspects about containers where we are taking something that was theoretically possible before, but practically you're not going to do it, and making it a practical reality. And I'm actually, you know, one of the things that excites me most about containers is looking forward to seeing some of these ideas that we're talking about and that we have been talking about for ages and seeing them actually come to reality. You know, so a great example of something that I am impatient to see happen is forever now. Forever there's been a discussion in the cloud world of a concept that is referred to as cloud bursting. And the idea of cloud bursting is that I would have some workload running on one cloud environment, I would hit my capacity on that cloud environment, and at a time when I needed more capacity, I would just spread to another cloud environment. So I'd be running on premises and I would take advantage of public. I would be running on a hoster and I would take advantage of a different hoster. And this sounds like a great idea, but it's always been held back by two key problems. The first problem we've had is that there just has not been a sufficient level of compatibility between different clouds. The second, more fundamental problem is that virtual machines are just too big. And if you're under load, that is absolutely the wrong time to try and ship 30 gig of data to another cloud to start up a workload. Containers are really small. They're really lightweight. They're really efficient. And all of a sudden, the idea of, hey, under peak load, I'm going to spin up more instances of this container in another cloud, seems possible, seems doable. So as I said, I'm really excited to see what comes here. So now I'm going to spend the next little chunk of the presentation. I'm going to do a very high level, okay, what's the architecture, what's the concepts? I am going to have a bunch of block diagrams come up, and I'm not going to speak much about them. And I'm doing that because I have a level 400 session this afternoon, which is all dedicated to going into the deep architecture. So I just want to get across some of the key concepts. So once again, looking at this in a historical perspective, you know, back in the late 90s, we were all used to this architecture. We had hardware, we had operating system, we had applications. It's a nice, simple diagram. We came along and we added virtual machines. And virtual machines use this hardware virtualization, where we make a virtual image of the physical hardware, but then you replicate the operating system and the application on top of that. Well, if virtual machines are hardware virtualization, containers are operating system virtualization. You know, same concept, virtualization creating an isolated space, but instead of replicating instances of the hardware, we're replicating instances of the operating system. Now, this has some pros and cons. You know, I will obviously be spending most of the time in this session talking about the pros. But you know, one of the obvious cons that's important to catch is, you know, with containers, we can only make more copies of the operating system that you're running on. You know, so with Windows containers, you have Windows Server 2016, and we can run lots of copies of Windows Server 2016. With Linux containers, you can create more instances of Linux that you're running on. This is a common question we get is, you know, does this mean I can run Linux containers on Windows? No, you can run multiple instances of Windows. Now, having said all that, we do have some tricks in our bag, and I'll talk about those that allow us to bend the rules a little. Now, on the container aspect, on Windows containers, we actually deliver two offerings here. The first one is Windows Server Containers. And Windows Server Containers is pure operating system virtualization. And it's very analogous to what you get today with Linux containers. But then we also deliver Hyper-V containers. And Hyper-V containers are where we blend some of the technology from containers and virtual machines to give you a lot of the advantages of containers, but with the isolation of virtual machines. This is also the technology that allows us to play around a bit with the restriction that I just mentioned of we can only run operating systems, the same operating system. So a great example here, I unfortunately won't be demonstrating this today, but if you have the anniversary update of Windows 10, you can run Windows Server containers on it using Hyper-V containers. Very easy to get up and running, and it's a great way to develop on Windows Server. We use Hyper-V containers to allow us to mix and match the operating systems a bit there. But an interesting story behind the motivation for Hyper-V containers. Because, once again, one of the things I like to do when I'm out on the road is I like to give you all some insight into what actually happened on the engineering team as we were building this. Because if you just wanted the marketing presentation, there are plenty of people who could give that to you. When we started working on Windows Server containers, and it's actually an interesting thing to be aware of, is this is a technology we've been incubating for a long time. We did look at this very much with a, okay, we want to build this virtualization concept for the cloud. And we started designing Windows Server containers. And we, when we first started on this, we had no intention of doing Hyper-V containers. But because we were building something for the cloud, we went, hey, we have some great customers to talk to figure out, are we doing this right for cloud environments? And that's all the services teams at Azure. You know, so Azure is honestly my biggest customer by a long shot. And inside Microsoft, from a organizational point of view, you know, I work on the base team, Windows, building Windows kernel, Hyper-V containers. One of my customers is the Azure Fabric team, who run all the hardware that powers Azure. Their customers are the Azure Services team that build the things like Azure websites and Azure automation and all the things that end customers actually use. So we went out and we talked to the services teams, to Azure websites, to Azure automation, to Azure ML, and said, hey, we want to build this thing and we think it would be interesting to you. And they got very excited about it because they saw the potential for it to revolutionize the way they built cloud systems. But very early on, as we were talking through the architecture, they said, wait a second, did you just say that these aren't hypervisor isolated? And we were like, no, they're not virtual machines. It's operating system virtualization. And they went, nope, not interested. And we were like, what? And they basically sat down and stepped us through. And this should come as a surprise to no one here. Every service on Azure is under constant attack. Every minute of every hour of every day, we have friendly people around the world trying to figure out how to break Azure. And trying to figure out how to break all of our services. And it's something that the Azure team is incredibly proud of, is the fact that no one has succeeded. But it is also something that they take very seriously. And so they were very clear to us. They were like, sorry, if you cannot give us a solution that uses hypervisor isolation, we will not use this. And so we went back to the drawing board and we figured out how to build Hyper-V containers that provided the level of isolation that our service teams wanted in our public clouds. So that is the reason why we have both of these. So how do containers work? And I'm not going to go hugely into this. I will call out a couple of contexts. The first thing to call out is, what role does Docker have to play in all of this? A lot of people get confused and think that Docker is containers. The easiest way to think about Docker is a great management framework. It's a great set of management tools to manage the containers on whatever platform you're in. So we have a lot of things built on the Docker engine, and Docker runs on both Windows and Linux and provides a management interface. Now, I do want to put a little call out here and say, you know, I'm very proud of the work that we've done with Docker. It is one of the most in-depth engagements with open source that Microsoft has done, especially for a core team on the operating system. We don't do Docker compatibility, we do Docker. When you have a Windows Server installation and you install Windows containers, as part of that, you are getting the Docker engine that is pulled directly from the build process that Docker uses, same code to create Docker on Linux. And at the end of this, I'll talk about why that is so important. From an architectural point of view, as I've discussed, we have the Windows Server containers, and we have the Hyper-V containers. And you can run these all on the same system. And you can run both inside of virtual machines. Now, this is actually an interesting point when we talk about adoption and usage. What we see happening today is we see that most people are actually running Windows containers inside of virtual machines. And that's fine. Once again, it's a huge engineering argument as to whether that is the long-term deployment model or whether that is a short-term thing. But no, running containers inside of virtual machines has a lot of advantages. So now let's talk a bit about the performance aspect of this. You know, one of the things that I discussed right at the beginning was when we started building containers, we were looking at building this for cloud, and we were looking at building this for agility. So these are some slides that were put together by my team. I actually rather dislike them, and I will explain why in a moment. But let's just talk. I'm going to talk about, and what I dislike is I dislike the virtual machine numbers. But let's look at the container numbers. So this is on a fairly modern piece of hardware. I've got the notes here. It's a HP ProLiant SL2580 Gen 8 system. We did these tests, and standing up a new Windows Server Core container with Node.js, so key thing to understand is all of these measurements are to Node.js responding to requests. For a Windows container, about a second. For a Hyper-V container, about 3.3 seconds. Now, if we do this on Nano Server, the numbers at the top now, Windows Server container under 600 milliseconds. For a Hyper-V container, 1.75 milliseconds. So this is really interesting. And these, you may be thinking, okay, those are some pretty crazy numbers. Why do you care about that? And one of the things that we discovered was that as we start lowering these numbers, we start to enable entirely new architectures. You know, when I talked about scaling out and responding to workload and so on, if you think about 600 milliseconds, 600 milliseconds is now in the vicinity that if I'm doing a scale-out web application, that if I've hit my capacity, someone can come in, ask for a website, and I can spin up an entire new web server and load a page and return it to them in a time that they're not going to, you know, think that something's gone wrong. That's pretty amazing. Now, I will say, why do I dislike the virtual machine numbers? Because they don't actually capture the comparison correctly here. The virtual machine numbers are for how long it takes to boot a pre-configured virtual machine. The container numbers are how long it takes from having nothing to creating a new container, deploying a new instance of an operating system, getting it up and running a workload. So the virtual machine numbers should actually be, you know, 10, 20, 30 minutes, not as low as they are. But now let's talk about density, because density is another area where containers absolutely blow virtual machines out of the water. So for, once again, Node.js and Windows Server Core, Windows Server containers, the first one, 150, additional one, 75 megabytes. Even smaller with Nano Server, so 120 and 75 megabytes. Now, each of these running in a virtual machine, you would be looking at least 10 times the amount of memory. Now, an interesting point to make here, and I've talked about, we have arguments on the engineering team about whether virtual machines or containers will win out the day. One of the other arguments that go on is right now, we spend a lot of time talking to people about, hey, you should use containers for building new applications. And that makes a lot of sense. One of the big debates we have is how much investment should we be making and should our customers be making in moving traditional infrastructure over to containers. And I remember, I won't name the name of the person, but I remember last year at the MVP summit, when we were first talking about containers publicly for the first time, we spent a day talking with a bunch of Hyper-V MVPs. And at the end of the day, one of them said to me, I get these containers, they're cool, but I think I'm going to stick with virtual machines for most of my infrastructure. And me being me, I got really angry at him. And I said, here's the thing. I run a bunch of infrastructure in my house because I'm a nerd. It's what I do. But in my house, I have a virtual machine that runs DNS. For a DNS server, I am wasting 20 gig of hard drive. I am wasting 1 gig of memory for a DNS server. Now, I know if I can get that into a virtual machine, we'll be talking 100 meg and 50 meg of disk. Why wouldn't you want that? Oh, why wouldn't you want a 10x reduction in the amount of resource being used by your workload? So that, to me, that's really powerful and really interesting. So how do I create a container? I have a slide here. I'm going to skip over it, and I'm going to go over to my demo, because I like showing things rather than talking about them. Just a quick question. Okay, excellent. Just thought I would check. So this laptop is running Windows Server 2016. I could be doing this on Windows 10. I'm doing it on 2016 because I have other demos that need 2016 here. I have a single virtual machine set up that's running Windows Server Core. I could and should be doing this with Windows Nano Server, but it makes my demos a lot more boring. So I'm using Windows Server Core today. And this virtual machine just has the container role installed and enabled. And side note, if you haven't tried this out, please, where you want to go is msdn.microsoft.com/virtualization. We have some great quick start guides that will get you up and running and to the point where I'm at in my demo in about 20 minutes. And that includes setting up the virtual machine and everything. We've tried to make this as easy as possible. I have Docker installed and enabled. I don't have any containers defined right now. The one thing that I have done to make my demos run a bit better is I did pre-download the base images for Windows Server Core and Windows Nano Server. And I'll talk about base images in a little bit. But this is the clean install of Windows Server and Windows Nano Server from Microsoft. And I will just show. So this virtual machine is set up. It's got its own IP address on 10.120.10.23. And if I look at my computer name for this, this virtual machine is called WinContainers. So that just gives you some idea of the environment. So with all that done, let's create our first container. So for this demo, I'm using the Docker command line tool. The nice thing about the Docker command line tool is it's the preferred tool by the Linux community, so most of the documentation that you'll find out there uses it. I do want to give a call out. I unfortunately do not have it set up in this environment, but we have a project on GitHub for building PowerShell interface for Docker as well. You can do everything through it, and the great thing is it actually even works on the PowerShell core on Linux as well. So a big call out to that. But I'm using the CLI here, and this command says Docker run a new container. --rm is a great thing that Docker supports for us people who have to demo this on stage. RM says delete the container when I exit it, and keeps my demo system nice and clean. --it says give me an interactive prompt, because Docker is designed for servers by default. So by default, it starts them in the background, which is great for production and terrible for demos. So I'm saying, give me an interactive prompt, please. The Microsoft Windows Server Core says, start from there. And CMD is saying, run CMD. So I'm going to run that, and there. So what's just happened? What's just happened is we have now, in a second, created an entire new instance of Windows. You might find that a bit hard to believe. So let's have a look. It has a different IP address. It's not using the same IP address as the host. It has a different computer name. This is all generated automatically. And it is now a complete separate system. So I can exit this. Docker will obligingly delete it for me. And let's do something else. So this time I'm going to say, OK, let's create another container. And this time use Nano Server. And rather than starting a command prompt, let's start PowerShell. So once again, about a second. And if I do It's got its own IP address again. I can have a look at the computer name. It has a different computer name. Because this is actually a nano server container, and this is an important thing, we do support running, I'm using Windows containers here, we do support running nano containers on server core. It only has a few processes running. So if I run get process, you see a very small set of processes. This is a nano container. So incredibly quick and easy to get these systems up and running. So as I said, please go to msdn.microsoft.com/virtualization to do this yourself. But now let's talk a little bit about what underlying technology was used there. So container images. This is a hugely important thing to understand is there are a number of things that are different about containers to virtual machines. As I said, I have a 400 session this afternoon where I'll be going into this in great depth. But images are a really important one to get your head around. On one hand, images, you can think of them, they're like the virtual hard drives for virtual machines. It's where we store the files that compose the virtual machine. But there are some key differences. The first one is, and I mentioned at the beginning, we built containers for the cloud first. And one of the big patterns that we saw in the cloud, which is not true of a lot of traditional virtualization, is that in the cloud, everything is built on layered images. You know, with traditional virtualization, if you think about traditional virtualization, a lot of these systems, what we've done is we've gone out, we've done P2V conversions of existing physical computers, or we've built up virtual machines by hand, and we have a bunch of, you know, monolithic virtual machines. Great. And virtual hard drives are built to do that well. But in the cloud, like, no one installs an operating system in the cloud. Just don't. Even without containers. You know, if you're running a private cloud, if you're a hoster running a hosted cloud, certainly if you're running a public cloud, what do? You create a gallery. You have a set of base images. And every time someone creates a virtual machine, what you're actually doing is you're pulling down one of those base images and you're creating a differencing layer on top of that. Well, when we built virtual machines, we did enable that, but we enabled that as an afterthought, as a secondary scenario. With containers, that is the only scenario. That is the only way to run. You know, you run with layered images. And every time you create a container, you're actually creating a layered image. And this has a number of interesting implications and advantages. The first one, which I'll talk more about later, is from an engineering point of view, we made a lot of optimizations around that. The second one, though, is that it's allowed us to enable some new models. So let's talk about the base image OS. So I showed you my system. I have the Windows Server Core base image. I have the Nano image. Those are distributed by Microsoft. You can't build your own, sorry. You have to use one of ours. And that's really important. Why is it important? It's important because what it means is that when you build your container, and you build your container image that is very small because it only has the files needed to run your application, you can take that small container image and you can run it anywhere. Because you can take that to any cloud, to any environment, and you can stand it up, and that container image will say, hey, I'm built off of the Windows image that's distributed from Microsoft. And that system can go, oh, I know how to get that. Or more likely, oh, I already have a copy of that. Let me run your layer on top of the base image that I already have. So that is a key concept to understand. And in fact, one of the design philosophies of containers, and I do want to be very careful here because there are some aspects of containers that are kind of hard and fast, i.e., you can't build your own base images. That's just not possible. And then there are some where it's like, okay, you don't have to follow this rule, but really things will go better for you if you do. So one of the big things that we've seen with containers that is a really good mindset to have is that you don't want to build containers like you've always built virtual machines. Now, I'm not going to do a show of hands, but most people here, if we're honest with ourselves, the way we build virtual machines is still the way we used to build physical computers, which is that we sit down at a console and we type in commands and we click buttons. It's just the way the tooling works. For containers, however, the right way to do it is to script the creation and configuration of them and to have it be completely automated and repeatable. And the tooling for containers encourages that. And one of the big ones we have is the Dockerfile. The Dockerfile is the recipe, the description on how to build this container in a repeatable and a reliable manner. So the next thing to understand is the concept of image registries. So image registries are basically repositories where you can pull images from. Now, Docker maintains a public registry, the Docker Hub, and that's actually what we use to ensure that everyone gets access to the same base image from Microsoft. So when you try to start a container, it needs Windows Server Core, and it needs Windows Nano Server, then Windows knows to go check with the Docker Hub and pull that down automatically. You can also run your own registry inside your company. Why would you want to do that? Well, in most situations, you're not going to just have an application running on top of the base image. You're going to have middleware layers. You're going to have development environments. You're going to have, you know, hey, you know, we have our, you know, our standard database is this version of SQL Server. Our standard web front end is this, and so on. You can build your own internal registry, create your own images that contain that in a way that's configured for your environment. And then when your development team or your production team needs to pull up new images, you're not passing around the entire installation of SQL. You're just passing around the top layer in the stack. So let me show you what this looks like. So let me just make sure I have nothing here, make sure my system is clean. So I have a ready-to-go Dockerfile here. So I'm going to bring it up so you can see what this looks like. This is a Dockerfile that says, from Windows Server Core, create a new Dockerfile that we're going to call IIS, and run these commands to build that Dockerfile. And it's just enabling the feature for the web server. So I'm going to run this command to build it. And this just says, build the Dockerfile that's in this directory and call it IIS. Now, a really interesting thing to understand just from a mechanical point of view, this is now going through and it's creating a Docker image that I can use to create multiple IIS servers off of. And I've just realized something. I do not have a virtual machine started that I need started. So let me start that up, because in a moment I'm going to need this guy. But what's actually happening behind the scenes is at this stage, Docker is going through, and for every command in the build process, it's actually creating a container, starting it in the background, running the commands that I need. And you can actually see the output here. So this is where we're going, so we've enabled these features. And at the end, it's actually going to create a new Docker image that I can use to base new systems off of. Let me just check that my virtual machine's starting up. I forgot that at the end of this demo, I like to show that IIS is actually working. Got that logged in. So there, that's finished building. And right now, if I have a look, you can see I now have a new image. I have my IIS image, which I built off of my Windows Server Core image, and it's there and running. So now, And that's right, I need to know the IP address of the host to pull this off. So let's copy that. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to say, Docker, run a new container for me. This time run it in the background, because we're doing the proper server thing. That's what the -d does. I'm saying, can you map port 80 from the container host to port 80 in the container? And can you use the IIS image to create it? So it's going to run. That's the name of the container. Done. We're up and running. So let's see, did that actually work? So if we come over to my client, I've got the command, not the IP address. Let's see if I can remember. Yes. So there's my IIS server up and running. And it took all of a second to stand it up. So if I do Docker PS, there we can see we've got this running. Let's try and go, actually, I'm not going to go off script, otherwise I would get it wrong. But to show that this is actually the website that I went to, what I'll do is let's kill it. So I'm going to say Docker stop. So now it's not running. If I come over here and refresh, it's going to time out because that website has now disappeared. So, yay. And we get the error message for the blank page. I love that. I'm not sure I can trust the blank page. So key thing to understand about that demo. So what I've just showed you is I just showed you starting with a Windows Server Core image, creating a differencing layer off of it, installing IIS in that, capturing it in a new layer, and then creating new websites using that. Now, this is not a new pattern. You know, anyone here who does cloud computing does that pattern today with virtual machines. The only difference is I just did it in 5 minutes. If you do that with virtual machines, if you are really good, and I mean really good, you can do it in 8 hours. Because this, I love to do show of hands, and I do want to call outliers. How many people here have ever got an unattend file right the first time? No one? I guess no one ever does. I've never gotten an unattend file right the first time. And you'll notice that in this demo, I never created an unattend file, and I never ran sysprep. Why is that? Well, it comes back to what I started the session with, is it's about containers are designed for the cloud. And you know, when we built virtual machines, we built them for physical computers. And guess what? For a physical computer, the idea that the next time you boot up, you might be somewhere else on a different system is a strange idea. And so we built tooling to let Windows know, hey, something really unusual has happened. You're now on a different computer. It's called sysprep. But in the cloud, that's not unusual. That is default. That is de facto. And so when we built containers, we went through and we built and changed Windows to understand that, hey, every time you come up, it's going to be a new day. You're in a new place. So you don't need a lot of these tools and a lot of these processes. So now for a favorite section of mine, this is the questions we get asked that when we first started talking about this 12 months ago, we didn't have the answers for, but we do now. So what about licensing? This is always a fun topic. Normally, I try and avoid talking about licensing because it's not fun. Simple answer is we do have different licensing for Windows Server containers and for Hyper-V containers. Windows Server containers are licensed like processes on Windows, i.e. we don't license it. It's unlimited. So any SKU of Windows Server, you have unlimited right to run as many Windows Server containers as you want. Knock yourself out. Hyper-V containers are licensed like virtual machines. So what does this mean? On Standard Edition, you can run 2. On Data Center, you can run unlimited. So hopefully, nice and simple. What about patching and updates? This is a really contentious one on the team, because we argued about this a lot. We support two models. We strongly recommend one. We support both. So the model that we recommend for patching an update is we recommend that you build your containers, that you completely define your containers in Docker files, and that what we're going to be doing is every month we're going to be pushing out updated versions of the base OS image, and that every month you should be rebuilding your stack on top of that image. And that the way you should think about deploying patch is that you pull the updated base image and you rebuild the stack. Now, on one hand, we believe that will give you the most efficiency. On the other hand, we do understand that that places the biggest burden on you. It does put the burden that, hey, you should go through and retool things and rebuild things. So for that reason, we also support update as a new layer. So what does update as a new layer looks like? It looks like you have your application, and you essentially run Windows Update inside the container. And what we will do is we will detect, hey, there's a new update, and we will create an update layer and run that on top of your application. So why don't we recommend this? There are two reasons, primarily, why we don't recommend this. The first one is this diagram is nice and simple. After your application has been running for 12 months, it's not going to be a pretty picture. You're going to have a whole bunch of layers from a whole bunch of updates. The second thing, and this is kind of a key thing to pick up, is if we think about, if we're rebuilding from the base image each time, if I need to move my app to another server, I am just moving the layer that contains my app. In this model, if I need to move my app to another server, I need to move the layer that contains my app and any layers above it. So the amount of data that I am having to move around when I move workloads is just steadily increasing. So we do support this model because we understand that it's a big tooling and mindset change, but we would really encourage people, please be thinking really hard about how to get to a world where you can rebuild these systems on demand. So what about resource controls? The short answer is we support all the same resource controls for containers as we do for virtual machines. Nice and simple. So CPU, memory, disk, network. What about networking? The short answer to this is I need a one-day session to talk about networking in containers. The long answer to, well, the medium answer to it is when it comes to container networking, you have all the tooling and all the complexity that we have today with virtual machine networking, and then some more added on top. So there is a huge amount of innovation going on here. There's a huge amount of flexibility. The one thing that I do want to just call out so that everyone is aware, in the little demos that I've done today, I've been using NAT networking with port mapping, and that is what Docker defaults to. We also support transparent networking where each of your containers get their own MAC address, so that it's just like what you get with virtual machines. We also support software-defined networking with full network virtualization. The right one is going to depend a lot on your different scenarios and your different deployments. So the whole gamut is supported. So what about storage? I've been talking about container images. Now, if you've noticed something, if you're paying attention, you'll notice that I talked a lot about building container images and rebuilding container images and throwing them away and rebuilding them and so on. And that's not great for persistent data. Technically, you can put persistent data in a container image. You're almost guaranteed to shoot yourself in the foot at some point in time if you do that. But all real workloads, you need to have persistent data somewhere. It needs to come from somewhere. So how do we handle that? We handle that through a technology called volume mapping. And what volume mapping does is it allows you to take any path that you can access from the container host, and it allows you to map it into the container. So using the Docker command line, this is dash V and two paths separated by a colon. But you can say, okay, I've got my database stored on a volume that's exposed to the host. It's currently mapped in at, you know, J drive, map that through to this container. And that's then stored persistently outside of the container so that you can rebuild and still have access to this data. What about Active Directory? Well, I'm going to talk about this in detail in my session this afternoon. The short answer for today is, yeah, we figured out how to make it work. So Windows Server containers, if you need to access Active Directory resources, if you need to authenticate against an Active Directory environment, that is absolutely possible and something that we're really excited about as a differentiator for Windows containers. As I said, I'll talk about that in more depth this afternoon. So what about automation and management? Now, a disclaimer, this session was originally put together as a 75-minute session, and I have 60 minutes to do this session, and I get 10 minutes back by just skipping through these slides at a huge pace. So my apologies, you're about to see a wall of text go flying by while I yell out single phrase words, and you're going to be like, what, but... because the short summary is, we have an absolutely massive ecosystem out there for management of containers. So one of the great benefits that we have around our work with the Docker project is that the long and the short of it is that pretty much anything out there that manages Docker and manages Linux containers using Docker also works with Windows containers. And we actually have a huge amount of excitement from these groups about being able to manage Windows containers. So from Docker, we have Docker Compose and Docker Swarm. Docker Compose allows you to define the relationships between containers and define applications as a multi-container solution. Docker Swarm is basically high availability for containers. Both work with Windows containers because Docker. We have the Azure Service Fabric, which is our cloud-managed offering for containers. Works with both Windows and Linux containers, builds on top of Docker. We have Kubernetes. This is really fun. Open source project built and funded by Google, works great with Windows containers, and we've had a great working relationship with them. Mesos Mesosphere. I told you I was going to be jumping through these slides. So. Another container management initiative, once again, great support for Windows containers. The Azure Container Service builds on top of all of these and supports them as well. Docker has Docker Data Center, which gives you, we like to comment, Docker Data Center is really like the System Center offering for a Docker environment. So here's a nice little view of it. Microsoft's Operations Manager also fully supports managing Docker containers on any platform. Actually, one, I will give a little call out. If you're looking for a really simple container management tool, I was recently speaking at Ignite New Zealand, and I met with a fellow who put together an offering called portainer.io. If you go to that website, it's also a really cool tool. But it's also a great example that pretty much anything built on top of Docker works with Windows containers. So what about development tools? Well, and this is a really important topic to kind of wrap up the session on. The first simple answer is we've done a huge amount of work with the Visual Studio team. They have some amazing tooling here. The link down the bottom, akka.ms/docker-tools-for-vs, is absolutely where you should start. The boiled down short answer is you get this up and running, and it enables an amazing workflow where you can do your coding in Visual Studio and do F5 testing and deployment. Where you hit F5, it will stand up a Windows container, put your code in there, run it for you. It has the remote debugger set. It does it all for you. It is magic. But the thing I do want to take a moment to talk about on this page is getting back to the question of, so what should you be using containers for today? And I discussed brand new technology. We don't know what we're doing. We're still trying to figure this out. I can tell you what I've seen customers doing successfully and what I would advise against. So what I would advise against, just trying to take and lift and shift a whole bunch of all your infrastructure across. There are two things that I strongly encourage. The first one is this, is that if you are building any new applications today, you should be doing it on containers. You know, and please, if you have any development in process, if you're looking at building any new applications, absolutely, you should be looking at containers. The second thing to talk about is we've actually had a number of customers having great success where they've gone, we've got an existing application that's a big monolithic application, and we want to change it into a microservices-oriented architecture. And what we're going to do is we're going to start by bringing that across to containers, and we're just going to bring it across as a monolithic application. And then we're going to iterate on teasing out components into containers. Those are two of the models that we've seen really be really successful. For the latter model, I wish I had a link here. I don't. If you go to msdn.microsoft.com/virtualization and go to community resources, I know that it's up there. We have a great project that's being put together by the community. Which you can, it's a tool that you can run against existing virtual machines, and it will come back and give you an assessment of, hey, do we think you can just lift and shift this into a container? And it looks at the roles and services that are installed inside the virtual machine and basically gives a thumbs up, thumbs down on like, hey, does this look like something that we would expect would just work? So that's a really handy tool. So with that, I am 2 minutes over. I told you I would go over time. I do know we have a break, so I'm going to hang here for about 5 minutes to take questions. Then I'm going to be out in the hall, but first I want to thank you all for your time. And I hope you have a good rest of the event. If you have questions, feel free to come up and ask them. Otherwise, find me in the hall.